football, basketball, golf,
sports, business, radio,
ice hockey, pro tennis, NASCAR, and more.
Sports, business, radio.
Come on, boy, boy, can you get it up?
This is Sports Business Radio. Sports Business Radio. We're breaking down the business side of sports each week. The biggest interviews, the biggest stories. Now, from our studios in Portland, Oregon, with Sports Business Radio, here's your host, Brian Berger.
You are listening to the best of Sports Business Radio. Welcome. In our next segment, you're going to hear my interview with Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports NFL reporter. We're going to break down the economics of the NFL. This was a conversation that we had earlier this year. Very interesting, with the NFL collective bargaining agreement coming up at the end of this upcoming NFL season. What are the issues that the players and the owners will be arguing about? We broke that down. You'll hear that conversation in segment two. In segment three, the head coach of the Miami Heat, Eric Spoelstra. I caught up with him in 2008 when he was first hired. Lots of pressure on him now in Miami. He's got the big three, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Chris Bosh. Get to know Eric Spoelstra. My conversation with him, the head coach of the Miami Heat, in segment three. In segment four, Ryan Sandberg, who many people predict may be the next manager of the Chicago Cubs now that Lou Piniella is going to be retiring. Listen to that conversation that I had with Ryan Sandberg back in 2008. That's coming up in segment four. Enjoy the best of Sports Business Radio. We'll be back with you next week.
Stay in touch with SBR on Twitter, twitter.com/SBRadio.
Dropped up and playing our favorite CDs, pulling up to the parties, trying to get a little bit tipsy.
This is Brian Berger from Sports Business Radio. I know many of our listeners dream of a job in the sports industry but don't know where to begin. To me, it's an easy call. Go where sports business education got its start, at the Warsaw Sports Marketing Center at the University of Oregon. As the first business school in the country to offer undergraduate and graduate programs themed around this multi-billion dollar industry, the Warsaw Center offers a unique blend and strong general business training, sports business curriculum taught by industry experts, and rich out-of-classroom experiences, including real-world consulting projects, study tours, and internships. With a strong industry and alumni network and a staff dedicated to accelerating your career, the Warsaw Center has a proven track record of placing students in teams, league offices, corporate sponsors, marketing agencies, sports media, and sports shoe and apparel firms. But like any elite team, there's only a few spots on the roster. To learn more, visit sportsbusinessradio.com for a link to the center's website. The Warsaw Sports Marketing Center, passion, integrity, and leadership in sports business education.
Back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
My guest is Charles Robinson. He's the NFL writer for Yahoo Sports. You can find him online at yahoosports.com. Charles, Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Let me ask you this. I've said recently, last few weeks on the show, with the demise of Tiger Woods, I think that Peyton Manning is the most marketable athlete in any sport, and I think he's the safest bet. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, he's definitely up there. I mean, the one thing about Peyton, you know, not only is he great statistically on the field, I mean, he's fantastic for the game of football. He's got, you know, great working knowledge of the history of the NFL, extremely smart player. But, you know, away from the field, I mean, he's almost a revelation. He's funny. I mean, I think anybody you talk to, I can't tell you how many locker rooms I've been in where he'll have a new commercial coming out and players will be kind of laughing and joking and, you know, talking about how funny he is on commercials. And you don't get a lot of athletes who are really commercially successful to the point that they have that crossover appeal, that they're very humorous, you know, to a wide audience. My mother, by no means, is an NFL football fan, but she knows who Peyton is and she really likes his commercials. I mean, you know, I have friends who still talk about his Saturday Night Live appearance,
yeah,
you know, where he did so many funny, you know, the fake United Way commercial, you know, was one of the things that people still talk about. And, I'd say that, you know, at this stage, I think he needs to do, I really believe that he needs to do a little bit more in terms of, I guess, securing that sort of dominant resume. He's got a Super Bowl. He's got, you know, the statistics, and that's great. But part of the reason why Tom Brady's respected the way that he is in the NFL is because of the fact that he's won three Super Bowls. And, you know, in the NFL, look, championships, those endure. They really do. And not that Peyton Manning wouldn't, But we loved, you know, John Elway, and he did all those things in the field and the arm and all that. But John Elway really didn't reach the apex of his career until he finished it with those two Super Bowls. And I think adding another Super Bowl, I think, heightens who Peyton Manning really is. And come on, you know, if Peyton Manning's in the Super Bowl, you can't tell me that we won't be peppered with Peyton Manning commercials, you know, from all the big endorsements that he signed. So it's definitely one of those moments where he's going to showcase that crossover appeal.
We're joined by Charles Robinson. He's the NFL writer for Yahoo Sports. You can find him online at yahoosports.com. Charles, this week, New York Giants president and CEO John Mara says he believes the owners and the NFL Players Association are moving further apart. He says, I don't think we're making any progress. They want a deal that is equal or better than the existing one. That's not acceptable to us. It sounds more and more like we're looking at an uncapped season next season and that we could be headed towards a work stoppage. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. I really do. I the Chicago Bears player representative, Robbie Gould, obviously who's a kicker for the Bears, you know, came out and said this week that, hey, look, they want us to give back 18% of our cut of the revenue pie, of the revenue pie. And that's, you know, that's not 18% of the overall revenue pie. That's 18% of the player's cut. But that represents a heck of a huge piece. And of course, the NFLPA is saying, okay, you want us to give that back. We want to see your books. We want you to crack it and show us how much money, you know, football teams are making. And I think players have gotten to the point they realize that you're talking about franchises that are getting, you know, upwards of $100 million a year just from the TV money. So, of course, players are going to sit there and say, how could they possibly be losing as much money as they say they are? They're not losing money. They're just not making as much as they would like. I think, you know, that's really the issue at hand here. Owners want to maximize the amount of money that you know, the amount of revenue and you know, revenue after taxes that's going into their pockets. And it's interesting to me. I think, you know, I went through the last time, you know, the issues with the extending the CBA and all that a few years back. I think players are far more educated now than they were at that time. I can't tell you how many players I talk to now who have been in meetings, you know, guys who normally you wouldn't expect to hear throw numbers at you, who say, hey, you know, I know 1% of total football revenue now is around $160 million. That's really, people need to realize that the NFL on an annual basis is a $16 billion a year business. And 1% of that total, you know, revenue produced by the NFL is about $160 million. So for teams to say, hey, we want to take back a couple points off that revenue, well, you know what? 3 points, that's $480 million that's being taken out of the coffers of players in the long run, and players just simply don't want to surrender that. So just from the standpoint of, I think, the leadership, you know, with NFLPA, making sure they're getting that message out to players, I think that's going to harden the stance for the NFLPA. They're going to have players now who are going to be willing to say, you know what, fine, work stoppage, they want to lock us out, fine, we'll be locked out, you know, we've got our war chest. We'll see how long this goes. I ultimately think, though, the guys who can make out in the long run, it will always be the owners. Even if they don't play in 2011, the owners still get that TV money. That's still, you know, tens of millions of dollars right into their pockets. And you know what? There's no operating costs in that situation. So they're actually making out more if they don't play football in 2011. Now, will it hurt them in the long run? Yeah, probably will. But you know, I'll say this, players have dug in. I think they're ready to go, and we'll see ultimately what happens. But, you know, the talk and the rhetoric, I think, seems far more legitimate now and not just, you know, posturing and sort of setting a negotiating stance, which is really what it felt like when Paul Tagliabue, you know, was sort of setting things up a few years back when they extended the CBA.
Charles, educate our listeners on what it means to have an uncapped season. The NFL has never had an uncapped season. Right. What does that mean to the layperson listening to this show?
Well, it means a couple of things. I mean, it means that you know, any NFL team can go out there and spend whatever they want on free agents. There's nothing restricting them. They can, if Daniel Snyder wants to spend $250 million on his roster next year, he's free to do that. Whereas now, you know, that's not the case. Everyone has a hard cap. You know, everyone has to adhere to that. But there's also no salary floor. And I think that's the one thing that, you know, a lot of fans, you know, don't realize is right now, you know, teams, there's a floor. There's about, you know, what, roughly, I want to say off the top of my head, around $90 million that NFL teams have to spend. They have to get above that number in order to you know, meet the requirements of the current collective bargaining.
So just like the Florida Marlins got slapped by Major League Baseball last week because they didn't meet that floor, that same thing exists in the NFL is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Teams, it's not an option. You will be fined. You have to make sure that you get to the point where you're above the salary floor. But if there's no cap, there's no floor. So if you're an NFL owner and you're saying, well, shoot, I'm getting all this TV money, why do I have to blow out my salaries, you know, on my roster to stay competitive? If I want, I can field a team for $50 million and then, you know, put the $100 million I get from the TV contract in my pocket, minimize my operating expenses, and then also, you know, obviously I get my cut of the gate. You know, not having a salary floor can be very profitable as well for owners. You know, players, I think, in their minds, they think, well, there's no salary cap. That's great for us because now all these teams go out and they're going to blow all this money. Well, the reality is, no, there's probably only three or four teams that are really going to spend well above the salary cap, and you're going to see quite a few more teams spend below what the salary floor would have been. And then, you know, one other thing, too, that obviously impacts fans, you know, unrestricted free agency changes. Now you have to have 6 years in the league as a vested veteran to become eligible for an unrestricted free agent. And we'll see that impacted this offseason because a lot of the marquee guys that would be unrestricted free agents, we're talking, you know, hey, you want an offensive tackle, Marcus McNeil would be out there. You know, Sean Merriman would be out there, obviously, at the linebacker position. You know, Vincent Jackson as a wide receiver, and that's just off the Chargers. You know, Elvis Dumervil, you want a pass-rushing linebacker, he'll be out there. You want a quarterback, Kyle Orton will be out there. All those guys have over 6 years as vested veterans, so they're going to be restricted free agents, which means teams will slap them with a restricted tag, which will say, hey, if you want to come and sign them, that's great, but you're going to give us a first-round pick in compensation or whatever we assign to this player. So it's going to significantly alter, obviously, unrestricted free agency. It will not be the bonanza, you know, that people are sort of used to in off seasons. You're going to see a very, very lean free agency period this offseason.
Interesting. Hey, before I let you go, we've got just a few minutes left. Pete Carroll leaves USC. He goes back to the NFL. He's with the Seahawks. He's calling all the shots there, just like Mike Shanahan is in Washington with the Redskins. How do you think Pete Carroll's going to do this time around in the NFL?
Well, believe me, this will be a situation that everyone will be watching. I mean,
sure.
Pete, you know, the one thing about Pete that I think is probably overblown, it's not like he had an utter lack of success, you know, in his previous stints in the NFL. I think Pete's problem was that he just never had that total overall authority that he wanted when it came to, you know, getting the players that he wanted. And, you know, this is really going to depend on, you know, Pete Carroll's coaching staff. And, you know, he's still assembling that now. But, you know, the mark of a great coach is the ability to go out and really capture other great coaches. And look no further than, you know, look at the New Orleans Saints. You know, I just spent some time in New Orleans, and Sean Payton's ability to give up $250,000 of his own money, turn over his entire defense to Greg Williams, is absolutely one of the, I think, maybe even the number one factor in you know, why the New Orleans Saints are probably considered the favorite to win the NFC Championship and represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. So Pete's ability to build a staff will be key. I don't think there's going to be any problem with motivation. If you saw his first press conference, that's who Pete Carroll is. He's a very energetic guy. He's a very forward-thinking, positive-thinking guy. Players will respond to that. And, you know, we'll see. When it comes to talent procurement, that's going to be interesting because he can go out at USC and every single year recruit the 20 greatest blue chippers. It's going to be far different in the NFL, obviously, but with no cap, and we just talked about that, having Paul Allen as your owner, someone who's, you know, got tens of billions of dollars to spend, probably helps.
Yeah, I used to work for Paul Allen in the Blazers, so he's got a lot of money, and he wants a championship and a ring, a Super Bowl championship, so I think he will go out and spend the money. That'll be interesting to watch for sure. Charles, thank you so much for joining us. You can find Charles online. Terrific stuff at yahoosports.com. Thanks, Charles.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Brian.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay in the know at sportsbusinessradio.com. Podcasts, blogs, and more. SBR, we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Brian Berger, host of Sports Business Radio. Well, I'm dusting off my golf clubs and looking forward to enjoying the gorgeous Oregon summer weather on the golf course. Like many of you, I'm on a budget. I want to tee it up when it's convenient for my schedule, and I enjoy playing golf courses that deliver a private golf club experience. That's why I want to tell you about the Ghost Pass at Pumpkin Ridge Golf Club. The Ghost Pass is Oregon's premier frequent player program that allows you to play the world-renowned Ghost Creek Golf Course for over half off of the regular greens fees. And with your Ghost Pass, you can make your tee times 14 days in advance. The Ghost Pass program sets itself apart by offering a competitive tournament program, which includes one exclusive Ghost Pass event at Witch Hollow. The Ghost Pass is available for only $150, and here's the best part. When you sign up for the Ghost Pass, you'll receive a complimentary round of golf valued at $150. So you literally can't lose when you purchase the Ghost Pass. Go online to pumpkinridge.com and sign up for the Ghost Pass today. I'll see you on the links.
One-on-one with those making the big-time decisions that impact your sport. This is Sports Sense on Sports Business Radio. Sports Business Radio.
My guest is Eric Spoelstra. He's the head coach of the Miami Heat. Hey, Eric, congratulations on your appointment as the new Miami Heat head coach.
Brian, appreciate it. Glad to be on the show.
So, Eric, you've taken a really interesting path to become the head coach of the Miami Heat. Can you tell us and our listeners the story of how you met Pat Riley and really how you got started in the coaching business?
Well, it was really my first job with the Heat, and I started out, it was 13 years ago. I was hired pretty much for the summer. Dave Wohl hired me, and I was working in the video department and working on the draft, a little bit of free agency, with the option of hopefully being able to extend into the following year. But as people remember, Pat Riley didn't even get hired until late August or early September. It was right before training camp, and he could not bring his staff down from New York. So I remember he came into my office one day. I had barely even met him, you know, and he said, "Hey, Dan, you're doing the video. Can you be the video coordinator? Can you do this job?" To be honest, I had really no idea what that even meant. I just said, "Yeah, absolutely. You got your guy." And, 13 years later, survived and got to the point where I am right now.
What a great story, and what confidence you must have had in yourself to basically say, "Well, I haven't done this job before, but I'm going to do it somehow because I want to keep within this organization."
Yeah. Maybe confidence or just absolutely totally naive. I really didn't have an idea, and I didn't even know what I was getting into. I mean, it really was tough at first, you know, working for such a taskmaster like Coach Riley, and he really was demanding and really set up kind of, you know, the baseline for my, you know, work ethic and, you know, stuff I really relied on as I moved forward.
Hey, Eric, walk us through the process. I know there had been rumors for a long time that Pat Riley was going to step aside at some point. Obviously, he's getting up there in age and he's had a Hall of Fame career. How did he approach you and say, "All right, Eric, I'm handing the reins over to you and you're our guy"?
Well, he kind of hinted at it, you know, the last couple of years. And, you know, he'd make jokes about it. You know, "Hey, you better get ready." And just kind of got my frame, my mind kind of working in that direction. And after this season, obviously we finished, you know, very poorly with 15 wins only, but he decided pretty quickly about a week after the season that he wanted to step down, and we met for about 3 hours, and he said that, you know, he wanted to step down and hand the head coaching job over to me, and just kind of went from there.
That's a great, I mean, you must have just sat there thinking, gosh, look at how far I've come in 13 years. You've put in so much hard work. But what an endorsement for Pat Riley, a Hall of Fame coach, to say, "All right, Eric, I see your traits and I see your qualities, and I want to give you your first head coaching opportunity." That must have been an amazing day for you.
It meant a lot, and really because of the relationship that we've built over the 13 years, and he's had a tremendous influence on my life and profession. You know, really as a mentor, you know, as my boss, and he taught me so much about the game and how to be a coach, how to handle the business of basketball and how to be a leader and so forth. And it really did mean a lot to me. And I really look forward to working with him in the future. It's not as if he's moving on. I hear so many people say that, oh, you know, he's retired, he's gone. No, he's still the leader of our franchise and will be running the franchise from the president's chair. And I look forward to working for him and together with him trying to get this thing back to where we were.
I'm joined by Eric Spoelstra. He is the new head coach of the Miami Heat. You know, I look at coaches like Phil Jackson, who gives his players books on a regular basis and challenges their minds as well. It seems like being a coach these days at the pro level is also kind of like being part-time psychologist. Would you agree with that?
It's probably part-time psychologist, part-time motivator, part-time teacher, coacher, mentor, you know, all of those things fall under category of head coach in the NBA.
You know, I see your relationship with Dwayne Wade. He's given you a lot of credit for really making him the player he is today. I mean, obviously he came out of Marquette with some amazing athletic skills, but you've really helped him hone those skills and become a fantastic NBA player. Talk about your relationship with Dwayne Wade a little bit. I mean, here's your guy. He's the guy you're building your team around, and you're going from an assistant to the head coach position. Have you had discussions with him about your transition?
Oh, yes. We've talked several times on the phone. And in fact, I was just in Chicago earlier in the week, just checking in with him. You know, he's working vigorously with Tim Grover up there, trying to get healthy and get his legs right, not only for the Olympics, but also to get 100% healthy for our training camp next year. And he's extremely motivated and really ready to redeem himself and the team, you know, for next year. But our relationship has been great, and it's been one that's been developed over 5 years. And, you know, I don't like to take credit for that because that's really him, and that's about his work ethic. He's really the one that was knocking on my window and had the drive and really wanted to improve, and he always wants to add something to his game.
Now, you've worked for Pat Riley. You've also worked for Stan Van Gundy, two guys, you know, taskmasters, workaholics, just basketball junkies. From everything I've seen and read about you, you're kind of a basketball junkie as well. It seems like you couldn't help but have that rub off on you from working with those two guys, right?
Right. You know, people talk about that all the time. Like, how early do the guys you know, from the Miami Heat get into the office? It's not a competition at all. I mean, a lot of us just like to get in early just because it's quiet. But I often get in there, you know, before, you know, the sunrise, and I'm rarely even the first one. For video guys, you know, a lot of those guys stay the night, and, you know, they're working all crazy hours in the evening. And as a young coach, you know, when I was coming through the Miami Heat ranks, it really does have an influence. You know, you see coaches that have been in the business for so long who have such a passion for the game and passion for coaching and teaching, it definitely rubs off on you.
What do you think about the balance between burnout and, you know, being a workaholic? What do you do to recharge your batteries? Are you able to do that? Or are you so driven, kind of like Riley and Van Gundy, that you're not able to hit the off switch every once in a while?
Well, I think everybody has some kind of outlet. And again, that's my comfort level. You know, I like to grind it. And, you know, for better or worse, I am a little bit of a grinder. And that's my comfort level. And, you know, as a release, a lot of times I just, you know, to clear my mind, I like to get out and run, you know, for half hour, 45 minutes. It's a great mental release, even more than physical benefits from it. I also like to read. Just the nature of the game, it's so competitive. You know, almost every staff is really grinding and working a ton.
We're joined by Eric Spoelstra. He's the head coach of the Miami Heat. Eric, just a few minutes left. You know, you're the first Asian American to be named head coach of a U.S. Major League sports team. That's really quite an accomplishment if you think about it. What does that mean to you on a personal level?
Well, I'm very proud of my heritage. And, you know, I'm Filipino, Irish, and Dutch, so I don't think there's many of us running around.
No kidding.
But it does mean a lot to me just to be a part of something unique. And it just shows that, you know, opportunities are available for anybody out there. And I took kind of a different path than many. But the fact that I've gotten to this point shows that you can be any race or color and still be able to succeed and do stuff that you want to be able to do.
Since you took the job, I know you've reached out to some of your peers in the NBA, but also some other people who are first-time coaches in their profession. How have those conversations gone? Do you care to share any of the tidbits, pieces of advice that people have given you?
The coaches that I've spoken to around the league, and some of them, you know, I've already been friends with, Lawrence Frank, Mike Brown, these guys are my peers, and we kind of came in the league at the same time, so they're about my same age range, but everybody's been very helpful. I mean, it's very competitive once you get into the season, but, you know, in the off season, it's a little bit of fraternity, and guys do want to see other peers succeed, so... You know, some of the tidbits, the main things have been, you know, you got to be yourself. And it's something that I was already thinking about, you know, coming into this. I can't try to be, you know, anybody else and really just be comfortable with myself and move forward, you know, from there.
Right. You mentioned earlier the Heat only won 15 games last year. And it was an interesting season. Dwayne Wade was hurt a lot. Obviously, you traded Shaq for Sean Marion, so he's a new face on the team. As you prepare for your first season as an NBA head coach, what are some of the things that we're going to look at next year when we see the Heat running up down the court and we're going to go, all right, here are the traits of an Eric Spoelstra coach team. That team shows us that he's leading this team now. We know he's in charge.
Well, I think, defensively, I think that we will try to do it, you know, what we've done over the years. We've been one of the better defensive teams
right
over the years, and that's something that's always going to be, you know, a staple for the Miami Heat organization, and that's part of our culture. Is defending and playing hard and being, you know, in condition. You know, in addition to that, offensively, it depends on who we're going to have on our roster come next October. But in terms of who we have coming back, we feel very good about, you know, our young core. It's exciting, young and athletic, you know, built around Dwayne Wade. And with the draft pick we have coming up next month, we feel that we can take advantage of that speed and athleticism.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of that draft pick, I'm not asking you to talk about specifics, but it's pretty well known that Derrick Rose, Michael Beasley, the two guys that are coming up in this draft seem to be most everyone's one and two. What do you look for? I mean, you're going to sit down, you're going to watch these guys, you're going to interview them as any of the teams do. What do you look for when you're wanting a basketball player on your team? What are the traits you look for that say, hey, this is a guy I want playing for me?
Well, obviously ability is one thing, and it has to fit into, you know, what we need. And coming off 15 wins, obviously we do have a lot of things that we need to add to this roster. But it starts with ability, and we also look into intangibles like character and work ethic and heart, how hard people play, how coachable they are. And, again, we feel very excited about the opportunity. We have the second pick in the draft. We know we're going to get an impact player. And a little bit of decision-making is out of our hands, you know, due to Chicago having the number one pick. But it's a great opportunity for us. And it's a great first step for us to make, you know, an improvement to our team.
Yeah, whoever you add to Dwayne Wade, you know, I think in the East – you can seemingly get back to the top a lot faster than you can in the West, so it seems like you definitely have that as an advantage. Last question. You know, Pat Riley is legendary for his intense practices. There's a lot of free agents that have said, I'm not going to sign in Miami because I just don't want to go through those practices. What are your practices going to be like starting this October?
Well, our practices will be dictated on, you know, things we feel we need to improve on, but certainly they will be hard. They'll be intense, but hopefully it'll be efficient, and we'll try to keep them as efficient as possible and keep it to around, you know, hour and a half or hour and 15 minutes, but it just depends. It'll depend on the season, time, you know, situation, our health, things of that nature, but it's an exciting time for the Miami Heat. You know, even coming after a season with only 15 wins, we feel very good about the players we have coming back when they're healthy. That it's exciting, young, athletic, and then we can add a couple players this summer.
Well, Eric, I think you're going to do a fantastic job as the head coach of the Miami Heat. I think the team has a bright future. Guests appearing during our sports segment will be treated to the gold standard of all steakhouses, Morton's the Steakhouse, the best steak anywhere. For the Morton's nearest you, go online to Morton's.com. Eric, good luck in Orlando this week, and we'll be in touch soon. Congratulations again on being the head coach of the Miami Heat.
Brian, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
This is SBR. Back with more after this. Sports Business Radio talks to the people who call the shots in the world of sports.
Brian Berger goes one-on-one with the biggest names.
My guest is NBA Commissioner David Stern. I thought you did a wonderful job of handling the game ball situation. You listened to your players and the owners, and ultimately I thought you got it right. What did you learn from that experience?
It probably pays to go the extra step to build a consensus, even though you don't think there's any other view that makes sense.
My guest is Jack Nicklaus. What are the main lessons the game of golf can teach us if we pay close enough attention?
You develop relationships with people. I think you play 18 holes of golf with somebody, you get to know them pretty well.
We're joined by Bill Hancock. He's the executive director of the BCS.
What we want is for the best two teams to play in the championship game. Beyond that, I'm not sure it's really fair to say what's good for the BCS or what's bad for the BCS.
Follow us at sportsbusinessradio.com and on Twitter at SB Radio.
One-on-one with those making the big-time decisions that impact your sport. This is Sports Sense on Sports Business Radio. Sports Business Radio.
My guest is Ryan Sandberg. He's a Chicago Cubs legend. He's a baseball Hall of Famer. He made 10 consecutive All-Star appearances and won 9 consecutive Gold Gloves during his playing career. His .989 field percentage is a major league record at second base. He was the National League's MVP in 1984. Mr. Sandberg, thanks for joining us on Sports Business Radio.
Hey, I appreciate it. Nice to be with you.
So you're now the manager of the Peoria Chiefs, the single-A affiliate of the Chicago Cubs. It must be tremendous insight that you can offer your players as someone who played there for so many years. And then, you know, just letting them get a taste of here's what the big leagues could be like. And in the friendling confines, by many people's opinion, the best ballpark in all of Major League Baseball.
Well, I have to agree with that. And, I'll definitely be able to show my team where the home locker room is. There'll be no problem with that. And But my guys watch the Cubs games on TV. We have TVs here in the locker room here in Peoria and often on the road. And we follow the team. And, I really can't imagine what will be going through their mind once they do take foot on Wrigley Field and actually be there. So a lot of history there. It's going to be a great evening and really great for the players and the fans that will be there.
You were always such an intelligent ball player, and, you know, obviously now you're managing. Do you ever have aspirations to maybe be sitting in that home dugout at Wrigley Field as the manager of the Chicago Cubs someday?
Well, you know what? I'm taking this 1 year at a time. This is my second year here in Peoria. I was given the opportunity with this job last year, and I'm just trying to make the most out of it. I come to the ballpark similar as I did as a player to learn something every day, and the major leagues is out there possibly there at the end as it is for these players. And I mentioned that to them that we're kind of all in the same boat here. We're all at A-ball. We all have an opportunity here to get pretty good at this and hopefully make this our profession. And hopefully one day make it to the major league. So that's a goal of mine, but I'm really concentrating on what I'm doing right now. And like I say, I'm trying to do it the right way. I'm trying to do a good job and be good at it. So far, so good. I really enjoy coming to the ballpark every day and having the wheels turning on what the players need to do as individuals to move up the ladder, and also what we need to do as a team to play well as a team. So it's going great. I enjoy it. And if one day I can make it to the major leagues, that'd be the ultimate.
There are a lot of great parks in Major League Baseball. As a player, what makes Wrigley so special? We've seen it as fans, but as a player, what makes Wrigley Field such a special field?
Well, as soon as you not only arrive to Wrigley, but even blocks away, you start to get the feel of, hey, this is a happening event today, and everybody wants to be there. And Wrigley Field, since 1984, has not had enough seats for everybody that would want to be there that day. And, primarily day games is a big thing. It's the main game going on during the afternoon. It has the history there. It's built in a way that was really built for baseball, where there's not a bad seat in the whole house, and the fans are fairly close to the action. You got the bleacher bums out there, which is creates a lot of tremendous energy out there. You got the ivy on the wall. I mean, really, it's the model. It's the old model of ballpark that the new ballparks have taken a lot of things from it. You got the brick around home plate. You got ivy growing out there. All the new parks you see have a little touch of Wrigley Field in it, but it has the vintage feel. There's obviously a lot of history there. You got the people on the rooftops across the street. You know, it's got the manual scoreboard. I mean, the list goes on and on. So all in all, it's just a very unique stadium and one of a kind.
We're joined by Ryan Sandberg. He's a Chicago Cubs legend and a baseball Hall of Famer. He was the MVP of the National League in 1984. You know, I want to take you back to the 1980s for a moment when you were playing. I remember seeing a poster of you, Bears running back Walter Payton, and Bulls guard Michael Jordan. And I'm wondering, you know, it looks like you guys had a fun time making that poster or at that photo shoot. I'm just wondering how often you interacted with the two of them, because the three of you really did own Chicago during the 1980s.
Well, through those years, you know, I'd see them at different events. All three of us were with Chevy, representing Chevy in the Chicagoland area. So there was the auto show in the wintertime that we'd all be at the same appearance, and since we played different times of the year, it seems like we were fans of each other. You know, myself going to Bulls game when Michael's playing in the wintertime in my off season, or going to the Bears game and Walter Payton playing. And, you know, these guys would show up at Wrigley Field during the summertime when they weren't playing. So it was just a happening thing going on in Chicago. It was some pretty good sports teams going on in the 80s in all of those sports. And Chicago is such a great city as far as fan support and the old traditions that they have with those teams. So it was great to be connected with those guys in that way. We just tried to represent Chicago and for what the Chicago fans like and stand for.
Well, you guys were all class acts and did a great job. Let me ask you this. Jordan obviously had a short-lived baseball career. Before he played or during his playing days, did he ever reach out to you for a tip or any advice?
No, he sure didn't. I actually played.
Maybe he should have.
No, you know what? I played against him in a crosstown classic game, and that's when the Cubs play the White Sox, but it's just for exhibition for the city. And this was all before 97 when Interleague came into play. And Michael had worked his way up through the system, and I actually played a game against him at the Wrigley Field. And I remember he got a chopping base hit over third base for the game winner that day. So I actually played on the same baseball field with Michael Jordan, so that's kind of ironic.
Pretty cool.
I'm going to take you back even before the 80s. You were a heavily recruited high school quarterback. Why'd you choose baseball?
Well, I think I was just a lucky guess, to be honest with you. I was recruited out of high school not only as an All-American quarterback for football, but All-State baseball and an All-State basketball player. So I was busy my senior year making college visits, and three different colleges, major colleges. I talked to all three coaches in all three of those sports. So it was kind of a whirlwind for me. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I actually signed a letter of intent to Washington State to follow in the footsteps of Jack Thompson, who was going to be a senior, and I'd have been a freshman quarterback. And I actually registered for all my classes. I had a roommate and everything in early summer. Then the June draft came, and I was drafted by the Philadelphia Phillies. And within 2 weeks, I totally changed my mind. And I said, you know what? What I really want to do is be a professional athlete and give it my best shot. So I said, you know what? I can sign right now. I could be a professional in a sport, and I can go into the minor leagues and study the game and put all my apples in one basket, so to speak, and give that my best shot. So really, that's what I did, just on a whim. I mean, all in all, it worked out so great. There's no looking back, but I was going through some stress my senior year in high school, that's for sure.
Well, you definitely chose wisely. We're joined by Ryan Sandberg. He's the Chicago Cubs legend,
Baseball Hall of Famer. We've got just a few minutes left. Ryan, I know you had some strong comments around your Hall of Fame induction about performance-enhancing drugs and your disappointment at what the game had become. So you now think that the game is being cleaned up. You're happy with the direction things are going?
Oh, yes, no question. I think Major League Baseball handled it very aggressively. I think they got I know they have a policy in place that is very, very strict and can really, it really sends the message to the player, not only at the major league level, but at the minor league level. So, baseball handles it very well, and I'm very confident that the game is definitely cleaned up, as I can see with the way that the game is played, and the numbers are numbers that I can relate to during my years playing with the Andre Dawsons and the Mike Schmidt and playing against Dale Murphy. These guys were power hitters, but we're talking about hitting these guys hitting 35 to 40 home runs. And so during those years of the 50s and the 60s and the 70 home runs, I had a hard time watching that because I couldn't relate to it to all the great players that I played with and played against because they didn't do that. So I do enjoy the game today. I think there's a lot of great players. Just looking at the All-Stars that were named yesterday, I think there's some good quality there. So I think the game today is as popular as it's ever been. With all the games on TV, with the fans that go to the ballpark, the new ballparks are fantastic. Interleague play is great. So I think baseball is at a high right now.
Last question for you. I've always admired the job that you've done in the community. I know you have Rhino Kid Care. Talk about that a little bit. I know you work closely with your wife and your family on that, and maybe you can just tell us about that and how you had the idea to start it.
Well, I appreciate you mentioning that, first of all, and people can look at that at rhinokidcare.com. My wife and I wanted to give something back and do something good, mainly in the city of Chicago, but we've also expanded to Peoria and to Phoenix, Arizona. But what we do is we cater to and we bring the outside world to the families that have a sick child in the hospital for extended periods of time. We bring the outside world to them and care to their needs, whether it's haircuts or massages or bus passes or meals or celebrating holidays. Whatever the needs are, we raise money and we have volunteers that go into 10 children's hospitals in the Chicagoland area, one down here in Peoria and one in Phoenix. And we raise money by, we have a big kickball tournament in Chicago at Grant Park. We raise around $150,000 for that, whatever we can do. So we get a big thrill out of that, and feel very hard touched when we go there and can help these families.
Well, I grew up in Phoenix long ago before the Diamondbacks were there, and the Cubs were the adopted home team, and I followed your career closely. You've always conducted yourself with the utmost of class, and I congratulate you on your job in Peoria, and I hope you rise through the ranks, and I'd love to see you managing the Cubs one day or being whatever you want to be, and I appreciate you taking time here on Sports Business Radio.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Nice talking to you.
You take care. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Podcast this show and any other past SBR episode at sportsbusinessradio.com. Back with more SBR after this.
This is Brian Berger, host of Sports Business Radio. Every championship team has one thing in common: good coaching. And I want to be your coach, your media coach. When I'm not hosting Sports Business Radio, I team with former Nike PR director Lee Weinstein to form New School Media Coaching. New School Media Coaching uses a fresh and interactive approach for educating our clients about dealing with today's media landscape. Whether you're an athlete, a coach, or a front office executive in the sports or business world, we'll prepare you for communications with the masses in today's social media world where everything is on the record. And just like any good coach, we'll help you practice your new skills and we'll be there to provide constructive feedback every step of the way. With a combined 40 years of experience, we're veteran coaches, but we use a new school approach. For an overview and a list of our services, visit newschoolmediacoaching.wordpress.com or email me at brian@sportsbusinessradio.com.
This is Sports Business Radio.
Well, you've been listening to the best of Sports Business Radio. Hope you've enjoyed the conversations with Charles Robinson, Eric Spolstra, and Ryan Sandberg. We'll be back with you next week with a live edition of Sports Business Radio. Want to remind you that we are launching our new website on August 1st. sportsbusinessradio.com. Check it out. We've got several new contributors that will be blogging regularly, people that work in the sports industry. You're going to enjoy their perspectives from around the world. Also, you can get our podcast on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook more easily. You'll see the icons listed on the front page. Much more up-to-date website with social media and getting you directly to our popular iTunes podcast. That's on the new sportsbusinessradio.com, so make sure to check that out. Lots of thank yous this week. Our show staff, Brian Griggs, Bobby Courser, Josh Blank, Darren Peck, Ron Barr, James Harrison, Doug Zanger, our sponsors, the Warsaw Sports Marketing Center at the University of Oregon, and New School Media Coaching, a podcast reminder. You can catch our show on demand via podcast every week. Go to sportsbusinessradio.com, click on the podcast page. You can also find us on iTunes. Type in Sports Business Radio. I'm on Twitter, @SBRadio. For Brian Griggs, I'm Brian Berger. Enjoy your week. We'll talk to you next week right here on Sports Business Radio. Hi, this is Brian Berger, host of Sports Business Radio. It's no secret that we're battling a tough economy these days. It's more difficult than ever for companies to position their brand in a unique way and reach their target audience. Sports Business Radio can help you, though. Sports Business Radio is syndicated in markets nationwide. Our popular podcast is regularly rated in the top 100 business news podcasts on iTunes and has listeners around the world. But our radio network and podcast aren't the only places your company will receive exposure when you join our family of sponsors. We'll also give you exposure via sportsbusinessradio.com and at our new Sports Executive Speaker Series events, which feature a conversation with a key decision maker from the world of sports in front of a live audience. And best of all, we can expose your product to the big name guests that appear on our show. We'd love to have you on our team. Please contact me at brian@sportsbusinessradio.com or at 503-701-2215 if you're interested in becoming a sponsor of Sports Business Radio.